Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, the Faith Edition, where your healing and faith journey matters. Where faith and trauma-informed healing unite in safety, empathy, and compassion. Now here is your host, Monique Coven.
If you like this podcast and find it a support for your healing journey, consider becoming a friend of the podcast. When you become a friend of the podcast and subscribe, you'll not only support the podcast to keep the healing conversations coming, but you'll also gain access to extended episodes as well as bonus episodes. Thank you for supporting the podcast.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Monique. How are you?
Good. This is becoming a little bit like a regular thing.
Yes, definitely. A good thing, though.
Absolutely. I wanted to have you back because I really value the things you share. You know, you're a therapist as well as a survivor. And so I just think you have such a unique perspective because you've got the lived experience of understanding in a deep way what it's like to have complex trauma, childhood trauma, and like how amazing it is that you are working with people who've had trauma and helping them. I just think that is so amazing and it's so encouraging because I think that people who really get it, they can be the best helpers in a deep way because they get it.
Thank you.
So this time we're going to talk about, as usual, complex trauma and healing. And I know for our time together, what I wanted was to talk about how it shows up in our lives today as people on the journey of healing and as survivors, and if it gets better or what it could look like after doing some work. And also, I thought you being a therapist and you provide tools for your own clients, if you could share with our listeners some of the tools that you use that your clients find helpful, and we can do them together. And
sure, that would be great.
Yeah. And this way they would feel they have something practical that they can take away from the conversation.
Sounds great.
Good. So one of the quotes I will start with, and then we can just get chatting. It was something that you wrote here. And I'm like, yes. I mean, the myth of giving it time, you know, that time changes everything. And I know that I heard that too, that just give it time. It's going to get better. Don't worry in time.
Yeah. And time really doesn't change anything, you know, as far as trauma. Sometimes it makes it worse, you know, as we continue to live with what's going on inside of our bodies, if we don't have interventions, sometimes it can pile up and get even worse for us. And in my story, you know, with addiction and things like that, it definitely did, you know, because I didn't know what was going on inside of my body. So I couldn't work with it. And so, you know, I think that it's kind of wishful thinking. And I have a lot of people that come in that'll say, you know, really don't want to work on the past. I don't really want to think about the things that happened. They're really painful, which is understandable. You know, I'd rather just give it some time. You know, and, you know, I usually point out to them, well, why have you come in the first place? And they're like, well, because things aren't working out so well. And so, you know, we work through it and we do it gently, though. We like go toward the body gently, you know, so that because you don't want to re-traumatize someone, you know, and so many times we do that to ourselves with shame and guilt and other things. But, you know, that idea of time, you know, again, I just reiterate, you know, it's wishful thinking that things would change in time. We need to do some things, though. And you know, I'm really excited about the field because the field has so many knowledgeable people in it now that are working through and helping people and educating people on ways that they can get better. You know, I was just talking to my wife, Debbie, about this the other day. I look back, Monique, and 10 years ago, I was a mess. You know, I think that I certainly have the remnants of it in my body and I experience it every day in different ways. But the good thing is I have tools now and I have more understanding about what's going on in my body. And sometimes it hits me out of the blue, you know, it'll be like 6 o'clock at night and I'll start to get really, really anxious. And then I'll remember, well, that was the time, you know, during the time when my dad, you know, sexually abused me. At that time at night, you know, it just comes out of the blue. There's not even anything going on, but it's going on in my body. Mm. You know, my body is reliving it.
Yeah, your body is remembering the connection between 6 o'clock and then what you're feeling in your body at 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've worked with so many people that have had traumas during different seasons, you know, whether it be fall or winter or spring or summer, and there'll be difficult times for them, particularly, let's say, if something happened in the spring, you know, they'll have a rough spring and it'll be cyclical every year, you know, and so just knowing that is really, really powerful.
Yes, yes. And that I think is one of the reasons why we want to talk about it, is because, like so many of us, we had all these symptoms and all of these, it just made no sense to us because we're no longer there. And yet we feel like in our bodies is responding like it's still happening.
Yeah, we carry it with us.
Yeah.
You know, and Janina Fisher, who you've had on, you know, talks about the living legacy of trauma, that it continues to live and it takes root in us. And so we have to do some things, you know, again, gently, to be able to work through some of this.
Yeah. So I wanted to just go a little bit deeper, just in case people still don't understand, when we talk about why is it that it's just not a matter of time? Why is it that we are still feeling it in our bodies? And we did say, you know, there's the reminders. But I think one of the big things that we know now is that the way that trauma is remembered often is in our bodies and in our autonomic nervous system. And and that was a big, huge missing piece for so many of us, because we just couldn't figure it out in our thinking brain. Like, it doesn't make sense. And it doesn't make sense in our thinking brain, but in our bodies and the way that God designed this protective autonomic nervous system to keep us safe, and how it remembers these things that are threatening and dangerous, so that in case it happens again, we'll be prepared. When we understand that, it just takes away some of the fear and some of the feeling like something's really wrong with us.
Yeah, like the shame, you know, the shame and the guilt. I was speaking to somebody the other day, and they said to me, and it was on a radio program that I was doing, and the woman called in and said, you know, I was married to somebody, you know, 50 years ago, and it was a very abusive domestic violence situation. And she said, I'm still having a lot of dreams about it, you know, and the first thing I said to her is totally normal, mm-hmm. totally understandable, you know, and so we moved from, you know, because on the phone call, she was really shaming herself and putting herself mm-hmm. down and feeling so guilty about it, you know, so we want to like reframe and say, no, that's how the brain works. You know, and it replays things, especially when we've had harm, replays things over and over again. And the brain doesn't have a timestamp. You know, the limbic part of the brain does not have a timestamp where it can differentiate between today and 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. And it's still trying to protect us from the harm that we experienced then.
Mm. Yes. Something just popped in my mind. I don't know. It just did. Maybe it was because I was watching a war thing yesterday. But I used to work with Holocaust survivors, and there was an elderly woman, and she was also experiencing some dementia, just a little bit, like very beginning. And I remember we were watching her, and she had this experience where she literally thought that somebody was, you know, a Nazi soldier. And was yelling, and this was one of the kind people that were working with us. But no, this is what she saw. So something triggered her. It came up in her memory and in her body, and that is what she felt. It didn't matter that it wasn't that person. She was there. This is what it felt like. She was reminded of it, and it played out. I mean, that's an extreme, I guess, example, but. You know, can you give us an example maybe of how that can show up?
It might have been something that I used before, but I, you know, in my book, I didn't use this one in my book, but one of the things that I talk about in my book is the past is not the past when it shows up in the present, you know? And so one of the things that I've shared at different times is that when I was younger, there was like physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, just a lot of things going on. And so when my dad would come home, the garage door would go up, and that meant that there might be trouble. Mm. You know, and so I didn't remember at that time, but now looking back, it makes sense that I would get really uptight when I heard the garage door open. You know, fast forward now, I get married, and Debbie and I are in our house, and she teaches school, and the garage door goes up. And I remember feeling, you know, just these feelings of dread and this anxiety, this fear, you know, coming up in my body. You know, and it wasn't until like 10 years ago when I started really doing some work, 9 years ago when I really started doing some work, that I noticed, you know, that now it happens. And now I can say, like, I know what it is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, until I could put those two together, I kept, you know, and then I'd feel shame, and then I'd feel guilt, like, why am I feeling this way? This is my wife, you know, but it really does happen. And again, just to, you know, restate, it's a protective part of the brain that's trying to protect us from further harm or further damage. And it's something we've been created with.
Yes, yes. And so many of us have, I know I did in the past, I was so angry at my anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand about trauma. And so I was angry at my anxiety. And then once I've learned about these responses, I'm like, wow, my body protected me better than any of my family members.
Yes,
you know, what a beautiful thing. And so even that, you start to have a different look. Your body is not your enemy. It's actually your friend that's still doing its job perfectly. It just doesn't know yet that it's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that, you know, you put it beautifully that, you know, you were so angry with the anxiety, and that didn't help your anxiety.
No.
It just, you know, creates even more activity within the body and the brain. And, and, you know, they just go back and forth. You know, the brain sends messages to the body. Uh-oh, we're in trouble. And then the body gets uptight, and then it sends messages back to the brain, and it just becomes this loop that just goes round and around and around, and we get stuck in it. I have a lot of clients that, you know, talk about being limbically stuck with something going on, you know, and it's something usually that's mimicked from the past, you know, that's getting replayed. And until they realize that, you know, they get in this loop where they're just perpetually anxious.
Yeah. And one of the things I'll mention, because what we learn with polyvagal theory is that it's also body to brain. Like you were saying, thinking so many
back
times we can be.
Yes. It just goes back and forth.
And so many times we can be triggered. But because the body picks up these cues below awareness, we don't understand, because we haven't. It's not in our thinking brain that's picked up the cue. It's our nervous system that's picked up this cue.
You know, I it was interesting yesterday, and I try to be vulnerable with my own story with this, just to normalize things.
Yes.
You know, yesterday I had gone to church, and we had come home, and everything went really well. We went out to lunch with a friend. We came home, and I can always tell that something's changing in me when Debbie says, "Like, is everything okay?" And I was like, yeah, kind of, I think, you know, I wasn't sure. And then as the day played on, and I'm still trying to figure out what it was, I felt more and more like inward, quiet, something was brewing. And Debbie asked me last night before we went to bed, "Are you sure everything's all right? You're kind of quiet." And I said, "I'm not sure." And then last night I had a really bad nightmare, something with family of origin that just was replaying, and I replayed it and woke up. And, you know, I would say for listeners, you know, if they're going through any of these things, and if you have trauma, you do, you know, that I would spend most of my day dysregulated in the past, you know. And so this morning I was able to get up, practice some things, which we're going to talk about, some exercises and things. You know, I was able to practice them, you know, and just kind of get in tune with my body and self-soothe, and to be able to carry on with my day, you know, whereas before the day would have been, you know, really, I would have been really dysregulated throughout the day. And I'm not feeling that now, you know, but in the past I did. So that's kind of a picture of, you know, what trauma recovery looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Wow. You know, there's another piece that it just made me think about, because I also spend time, one of my traumas was really being alone in it. And I know it was yours too, but some of my work is also, my own personal work is also regulating, like you talked about, so that you can go on, but also I make it a point of not just regulating and, okay, it's passed, but maybe giving a little opportunity to sit with it and give a little compassion or kindness mm-hmm. for that. And then just kind of then be able to like regulate and move mm-hmm. on. But it's so important to me because I feel like that part of the inner child or the pain that was on the child was always alone. And I just like to always kind of go back to that and just give it a name and give it context and support.
It makes me think of Dr. Gabor Mate. You know, he talks about the fact that, you know, trauma is not what happens to us, but it's what happens inside of us as a result of not having an empathetic witness. You know, so that's part of what you're doing now is you're coming alongside mm-hmm. and you're, you know, providing empathy to that situation or to that inner child, you know, for what happened, you know, and that's not something we received earlier in life.
And I want to say here, in case people are like, well, I try to do that, but I can't. Totally normal. Right. I mean, I had zero connection with that part mm-hmm. of me. It was like, I was almost like I did what I felt she was. And it was like, get away. I don't want anything to do with you. It's mm-hmm. like, you don't like them. You don't like that part. So that's a process.
It's funny you say that because in rehab every morning, we did mindfulness exercises. And I can remember, you know, you had to close your eyes and think about something and get into my mind was just like all over. And I was like, these people don't get it. And they did, you know, but these people don't get it. My mind doesn't work like this, you know. And so my mind was all over and just tension span was just to 42,000 things, you know, when I'm trying to like sit with my emotions, but I can do more of it now. It gets better. And that's what I want people mm-hmm. to hear too, is it does get better.
Yes, yes, yes. Our ability to tolerate, you know, we have to do it in such small doses and small little mm-hmm. increments, but it does, you know, it does increase. And that's another thing I really want to do with this podcast is we talk about trauma, but I also want to talk about ways or supportive practices or things that we can do that can help us to increase the tolerance in our nervous system and help us have this a little bit of a wider.
Yeah, Dan Siegel talks about the window of tolerance, mm-hmm. just widening that, you know, being able to put up with. And I can remember, you know, getting out of rehab and just feeling like I was running around without skin on. I was so raw, so uptight. And now I can, you know, sit with myself more.
Wow, you know? And that's huge.
There's still those days that are really rough, but I want people to hear it does get better.
Oh.
You know, you still struggle, but it does get better.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, those of you who don't know Mark's story, tell us the name of your book. I mean, I will put it in the show notes, but
sure. It's Finding My Words, A Ruthless Commitment to Healing Gently After Trauma. And I just talk in there about, you know, a lot of different horrendous things that happened to me, incomprehensible things that happened to me, but how I didn't have the words and I had to find the words and then speak the words. And then I had to find ways to self-regulate and to be able to embrace, you know, those words to find gratitude, mm-hmm. you know, and now I'm being used, you know, to help other people. And that's a lot of gratitude for me because I'm amazed, you know, how much other people, as we were talking about, resonate with your story. You know, there's something about mm-hmm. saying like, I know that it just like your nervous systems, you know, kind of bond with
yes.
each other.
Yeah. Yes. And to me, that's why I like having you on. It's just, to me, it's just such an inspiration. It's like, you see, here's someone who went through atrocities and look at him. Look what he's doing. You know, this can be you. It gets better. It can get better. Your life isn't over. You know, your story's not over. It's not done yet.
No, absolutely not. And we just have to intervene. We have to be gentle. We have to be kind. We have to be empathetic. And you know, the other thing is just connecting with others is really powerful in this because it's just amazing when you know, you're able to share with safe people and, you know, there's no guilt, there's no shame, there's no eye rolling, there's no, you know, they just are like, yeah, that's hard.
Mm, absolutely.
You know, and the limbic part of the brain, I'll say this too, you know, the limbic part of the brain doesn't have language, you know, so it regulates by, you know, how we feel and how we treat ourselves, you know, we can't convince ourselves or talk ourselves out of being dysregulated.
Exactly. And I want people to really get that and understand that, because, you know, there used to be this train of thought, and it still might be around, that you just say these affirmations. Not that affirmations are bad. They can be good.
Yeah.
But recognize it, that when our body's in an activated state, like you just said, it doesn't understand language, and it's not going to help by just walking around and saying, I am safe, I am safe, I am safe. You know, the way that we show our bodies that they're safe in a felt experience, like what you're talking about with the exercises, mm-hmm. then it's like, oh, okay, I could feel it in my body. Ooh, I feel a little more soothed.
You know, and just quickly, that idea, Monique, that for years in psychology, and still has its place, you know, but it's change your thoughts, and that'll change your emotions, and that'll mm-hmm. change your behavior. And in trauma work, a lot of times you have to flip that upside down, and you have to say, change your behavior, that will begin to regulate your emotions, and that will change your thinking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so, yeah, affirmations and all of those things are good. They're powerful, but it doesn't work for trauma. At least I have not found it to work with the complex trauma that I went through.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to bring in scripture now. Mm-hmm. I think that scripture is a wonderful thing, and it's, you know, it's beautiful. But if we're relying on that to regulate your nervous system when you're completely in an activated state, mm-hmm. I mean, it might work for some people. I know for myself, mm-hmm. it didn't. I mean, mm-hmm. I can remember being a young mom, and I'd wake up so activated. I would go to my chair to have my quiet time crying. That's how activated I was.
Yeah.
And I would like, okay, you know, and I know God heard my prayers and he heard my cries, but it was really hard for me to let the meaning of the scripture make me feel safe.
Well, you know, you don't have access to the prefrontal cortex, which is the thinking part of the brain. Exactly. So you're reading and you're not even really gaining from it because you're so dysregulated. You know, and I went through that for years, and just like, what is the matter? Like mm-hmm. other people just seem to be able to read it and get regulated. The truth is that they were pretty regulated to begin with,
yes.
you know, so when they picked it up, but you know, even with things like I once shared with somebody that I was having really bad flashbacks. And, you know, he said to me, well-meaning, well, are you praying about it? And, you know, during the flashbacks, and I was like, I can't even think straight when I'm having a flashback. You know, it just like, no, you know, and scripture talks about, you know, how God intervenes for us in those situations,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that when we're unable to, you know, even utter the words. But, you know, it's something to be careful of with that, because a lot of times we put things on people and we don't realize it doesn't work for them. And you know, something that you and I've talked about a lot is it's not one size fits all.
Hmm.
You know, even like with the exercises we were talking about, and we'll talk about, you know, one thing for one person works really well, and somebody else is like, no, not so much, but something else works really well.
Yeah.
For them. And so people have to try and experience different types of things to see what works with their nervous system.
Yes. Yeah. I want to just kind of go back to what you were saying about people not really understanding and maybe, you know, in their heart, they really are. I think their intention is really
absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
to give.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But they too don't know that, just like we were talking about some of the cognitive affirmations or therapies, that they, including, you know, the religious community or faith communities and psychology at one time, didn't understand about the prefrontal cortex going offline. And so when we understand that, we know that you're not broken. There's nothing wrong with you in that mm-hmm. sense at all. It's just how our brains work when we have been traumatized.
Right. And we talk about, you know, research has shown that the hypothalamus, that part that differentiates between the past and the present, shrinks
mm-hmm.
during trauma.
Yes.
And so we don't have even that as an asset at that point. It can grow back, you know, which is just a wonderful thing, but it has to be cared for well, you know, and we need to be gentle with it.
Yes, yes. And that's, as you said, the hippocampus, and that's so important, why we want to understand that when we're in trauma and, you know, our, especially as children, our experience doesn't get processed through the mm-hmm. hippocampus. And so it doesn't become like a time-stamped experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what gets processed often is the sensations and the emotions of the experience. So sometimes you can have a flashback or a trigger and you feel stuff, but there's like no
Language there. There's no language there.
Exactly.
You know, another thing I found really helpful that I just thought about is when I'm around people who are safe, who care about me, I begin to regulate more.
Yeah.
And I have a great friend, his name is Brennan. And I've never shared this with him, but now he'll hear it. But, you know, that idea that whenever I'm around him, my nervous system just, you know, relaxes. And so those are the type of people you want to be around. You know, I get off the phone with him now and I'm just like, I feel safe. I feel like, wow, this was a good conversation.
I cannot underestimate the power of these kinds of people in our lives, especially as trauma survivors, because you're right. Yeah. We co-regulate with their nervous system. And, you know, a lot of us, we are so used to one kind of nervous system, which is a very activated one. And when we start to notice and be able to differentiate what is a safe one, what is not, and how, I remember Deb Dana saying, when you're with the person, does your nervous system feel like a welcome?
Yeah.
I mean, that's such a great way of seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, really, when we can have those kinds of friends that have those kind eyes and that listen, yes, our nervous system gets regulated. And I believe we get changed by those people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I have a couple of friends like that. I'm so blessed. And I was thinking, in fact, I was telling her yesterday that I'm going to have her on the show, on the podcast, because she's an ordinary person. She doesn't think she did much in people's lives, and she has no idea how God put her in my life. And I watched how she mothered. I watched how she is. And she was what you said, that bomb, that she just was a regulating resource. And I told her this yesterday, when people walk into a room, your eyes always expand. Like, you're so happy to see them, the way that we try to do with our children each time we see them, you know, open our eyes. She does that. And just the impact it's had.
The welcome, you know, that just starts working on your nervous system to relax it. Yeah.
Oh, so precious. Such a gift. What kinds of self-care do you do that you feel is helpful? And what do you mean by self-care?
You know, just taking care of yourself. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come from backgrounds where there has been chaos or there has been trauma, a lot of times we look at these things and they're not even like, you know, they're ordinary things, but we don't even know about them. And so, you know, for me, things like having a regular doctor's appointment or dentist appointment, or, you know, things like getting a bath every day in the morning to relax my body, taking a walk. You know, I just started walking again yesterday. It was warm here. And so I was able to walk and, you know, it just felt good. And, you know, a lot of times with self-care too, is it doesn't feel good to begin it, but you always feel better afterwards, you know, because there's that bit of resistance. You know, for me, like talking with friends, I have a lot of really good friends. I mentioned Brennan, but there's a lot of friends that I have. And so connecting with them is really, really powerful for me. Spending time with Debbie, like going on a date night or something like that, going to the movies, you know, things like that, they're just special things that don't seem like they're like selfish, but like add them up and they become really good. You know, people talk about going to the gym. That's something that's really important. Me, I'm in therapy now again. You know, I try different things and you know, get things from that particular person and then, you know, move on to somebody else to work with somebody else. And so that's a really good thing for self-care. You know, we talk about, you know, after the first of the year, going to the gym and doing things like that. But a lot of times we don't talk about that with mental health. Mm-hmm. Really, like a good thing to do to care for yourself is to, you know, go for therapy. You know, there's doesn't have to be anything wrong with you. You know, you can really benefit from it. And especially with trauma, if you have a trauma-informed therapist that can guide you in areas that they have learned, really, really powerful. You know, playing with putty. I have a putty here. You know, just when I'm feeling uptight, just start playing with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like little things like that.
Mm.
It can be really important. Drinking water, drinking a lot of water throughout the day, you know, eating well, which I don't always do well with, but, you know, I'm working on it, becoming more aware of that, you know, just, and not shaming yourself for where you are. You know, just being like, you know what, I'm not where I want to be, but I'm not where I was either. Really important, you know, anxiety raises up. And in the past, I would just shame myself. And now there are times when I can actually say, like, I want to welcome this and see what it has to say to me. Not always. I'm not always successful with it, but I like to try to do more of those things.
That's really great. Yeah. And I agree with you. I think when we're not used to this kind of thing, and they're ordinary, but those kinds of things, they do become like they matter and they make a huge difference.
Yeah.
These different kinds of ways that we can care for ourselves. I remember when I was coaching at one time, there was someone who, she was brought up by a really unstable environment, and she didn't even know when she was thirsty. And she started paying attention to those things. And it was those little things made a big difference. I mean, we think, what do you mean you didn't know when you're thirsty? Yeah, you can be so disconnected from your basic needs because you're always on survival that, so it's, I think, slowly coming back into your body and then taking care of that body.
Yeah, I think about even, you know, compensating for things like for praying. For me, I have a hard time praying because my mind is like in a thousand different, you know, so I found that it's really helpful for me to journal my prayers, you know, to write out. And sometimes I draw them out, you know, just getting creative with things like that. You know, another one that I've talked about in the past is coloring. Coloring can be really, really effective in, you know, doing self-care and just helping your body to relax.
Oh, I love that. Because remember when we were kids and when we would color, we would go another place. And I think that can be really.
Yeah, it can allow us to go there. Yeah.
Got to get me an adult coloring book.
Yes. Yeah.
That's really great. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to share before we do maybe some of the exercises?
I would just like reiterate what we've been talking about.
Okay.
You know, it gets better.
Yeah.
You know, as you work, it gets better. Not perfect. We're not going to know perfect on this earth, but it does get better. And so if there's somebody out there listening and feeling pretty dysregulated today, you know, as they're listening to this or feeling discouraged, just, you know, just want them to hear, you know, that it does get better, you know. And it's not in time that it gets better. It's what you do in that time that leads to healing.
You don't know how powerful your words are right now with what you just said, because I wish somebody would have said that to me, a survivor like yourself. If somebody would have said that to me in my early 20s or my 20s period, even in my 30s, I didn't hear that anywhere. So thank you for saying that. And I attest that that is so, so, so true. It is really true. Yeah. All right, Mark. So maybe we will... we'll do some exercises together, some of the strategies or tools rather, not strategies, but some of the tools, the ones that you give your clients to help them.
Yeah. And I want to say that, you know, I give them to clients, but I also do them myself, you know, some of them because they work. And so, you know, that's a great way before you share it with somebody else, teach somebody else. And then you learn how to do it yourself and then you can share it with somebody else. So
absolutely.
You know, the other thing is if people are listening and something doesn't resonate with it, that's fine. You know, one might, another one might not, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's start with the first one and we'll do some different ones. But, you know, you had talked to me before about doing them slowly, and I want to do that slowly. And I want to say to people, practice this. You're not going to get it right away. Mm-hmm. So practice it. It's fine to kind of like watch this over the podcast or listen to it over and over and try to get it, you know, so that it works for you.